GalaxyCon Live is the place for you to hear about fandom from the celebrities who bring geek culture to life. Welcome, friends and fans, to another edition of GalaxyCon Live, where we are bringing the convention experience directly to you. And today, we are going back to Colony LV-426 with a cast of aliens. So without further ado, let's hop in the dropship and see who we find. Our first guest is an actor whose body of work includes Hellraiser 2, Sherlock Holmes, and several voices on the North American version of Thomas and Friends Storytime. Today joins us to discuss the role of Lieutenant Scott Gorman. Please welcome William Hope.
Hey, guys. How terrific not to see you yet. Patty, thank you for that amazing intro, and really great to be here.
Oh, it's terrific. Absolutely good. My pleasure. Thank you for joining us here today. Yeah, I'm a great fan of your body of work. I'm a huge fan of Spooks, or as we knew it over here, MI5.
Cool.
Great role in that season. And
very cool.
And I have to admit, for many years in my 80s, when my gorehound buddies and I, whenever something strange would happen, we would quote you from Hellraiser, weird, effing weird. Of course, we didn't say effing, but you know
that's
what
right.
I mean.
That's right. We're not allowed to say fucking weird? No, I guess not. But,
no, we can, okay. We can say whatever we want. Anybody who's a kid now is an adult now. And so too. But, William, thanks so much for joining us here
today. That's great.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Good to see you, man.
Oh, absolutely. And next, he is an actor whose body of work includes Hill Street Blues, Jeeves and Wooster, and the very underrated series Bite Me. Today, he joins us to discuss the role of Private Frost, first name still being debated. Please welcome Rico Ross.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Rico. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am well. Yes, some sources say that your character's first name is Rico, but I believe you have maintained that his name was Robert.
I have maintained that.
Okay, we will stick to it. Rico, so good to join us today. And I have to say this, I am a huge fan of all versions of Doctor Who. And the greatest show in the galaxy is one of the seminal ones from McCoy's run. And hey, you know, you were in UK for a while. You picked up some work where you found it. And that was one of the better ones. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, well, pleasure is all mine. And thank you for joining us here today. And finally, he is an actor whose body of work includes The Shawshank Redemption, Voltron, Legendary Defender. And of course, he's one of the guys from the documentary, That Guy Who Was In That Thing. Today he joins us to discuss the role of Smart Gun Specialist Private Mark Drake. Please welcome Mark Ralston.
Hey, man.
Yahoo!
My character's name is Mark?
that's what the novelization had claims. So, along with his background of being a juvenile delinquent and joining the Marines to get out of being in prison.
There you go.
Yeah, typecast again. Yeah.
Mark, how you doing, boss?
Man, doing great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for being here today. And I'll throw this out. I'm a huge fan of your Lex Luthor from Young Justice.
Sweet. Yeah. My gosh, that was a great little series, and a wonder that we didn't get picked up again. We were dropped and picked up. And
you know, what goes down must come up, you know, or can come up. And as we all know, that's showbiz. But
don't you hate it when that happens? Yes, you do.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
I managed to play Luthor a couple of different times.
So. Yes, right. The Injustice video game and a couple of, so you've made that character one of your side gigs, and good on you for that. So indeed. Gentlemen, welcome to the GalaxyCon virtual stage. Our team is going through the chat room right now, pulling out the questions for you. In the meantime, I'd just like to throw this out for each of you. What was the craziest day you experienced on the Alien set, besides the staff revolt against Cameron because he wouldn't let them have tea time?
Yeah, do you want to? Who do you want to go first?
Gentlemen.
All right. So okay. Yeah, that was probably the weirdest time. What you just said, but apart from that, I think it was probably the day that we were all called to rehearse a scene. I forget what the scene was, and everybody else got there. I think I was kind of last to arrive, and Cameron got on my ass for being late and said, "Come on, Bill, you know, this is a big movie. We got to get this. You can't be, you're not at RADA now." And I just started to boil. And that was the first time I started to rehearse visualizing what steps I would have to do, one, two, to take his lights out. But that was, I really, I thought, fuck you, man. Sorry, not allowed to say that.
No, you say whatever.
Get off my back. But to this day, I think it was Jim riding me to get me in the right frame of mind. But there you go. Okay, that was one of the weird ones. Okay.
And you don't have to apologize for language. Y'all can say whatever the fuck you want.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So almost clocking Cameron. Good line from what I've heard.
Well, you know, Jim almost got his comeuppance because it was the day, remember, when the APC, they were doing a long shot of the APC just like hurtling toward somewhere. And Jim and the DP were behind some plexiglass and the brakes went out and they nearly got smashed by. Remember? And and the thing did hit the wall of the active power station. And then because of the impact, asbestos came raining down from the ceiling of this place. And Sigourney, like, was in super mom mode. She just jumped into action and said, "That's it, everyone off the set." And she ordered the production to bring hazmat onto the set to, you know, they're walking around in the suits with these Geiger counters. And finally deemed that it was okay. But I was sort of locked in the back of my head. It's like, wow, if I ever get mesothelioma, you know, I'm going to sue the fuck out of somebody who's sending me rocks.
How do you spell that? No, but also take the crew out with, you know, on day four of the shooting.
So
I do remember that. That was intense.
So he almost got his comeuppance for being so rude to you, Bill.
Yeah, but just, you know, tag on to the end of that story. I really was going to clock him. You know, I was really going to, until Sigourney stepped in and said, "Jim, you can't behave like this to people," because he was doing it to everybody, apparently. And to be fair, Jim knew everybody's job backwards. No, you can't do it like that. And but Sigourney actually had words of him, so you're going to have to back down, chill out, just relax. And he got better after that. Anyway.
Yeah, and he, there was a, and to his defense, there was so much on his shoulders.
No kidding. I
mean, young director, everybody thought that Terminator was a fluke.
Yeah.
You know, the people in Hollywood, everything on LC, had been handed this, and he has delivered, and he has continued to deliver in all of his projects.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
So,
I would agree with you, Pat, on the fact that he had a lot on his plate, because I remember when he would direct, sometimes he would be. He would be very short and like straight to the point, which could be considered rude. But I think when you have so much on your plate that you don't have the time to talk about things in flowery colors. So you get straight to the point. And I did find that early on that he would say some things that were just like short, but I got used to it. And I also understood that, you know, he had a lot on his plate. So it kind of worked for me. Yeah. But the strangest moment I remember on the set, and I was going to say the time when there was a kind of like the revolt, but no, the strangest moment for me was the day that, you know, that Michael Biehn hadn't been the first choice for that role. And we had been shooting for like a couple of weeks, and Mike Biehn's character and my character were best friends. And when you work on a film and you're supposed to be buddies with someone, as an actor, very often you become buddies with that person off screen too, because it makes the relationship on screen that much easier. And so I had kind of like become a buddy with James Remar, and all of a sudden he wasn't there. And I think James made a call to Michael Biehn, told him, "This is a job, this, you got 24 hours, this is the pay. You got 24 hours to get on the plane and get here." And all of a sudden I had a new best friend on set. And That was very strange. And then when Mike started doing his version of the character, and it was so very different from what James Remar was doing, I didn't feel it. I wasn't feeling it, and I'm still having loyalty to the guy who's not there anymore and not giving Michael a chance in my head. I didn't say anything, but this is what I was thinking. And so that was the weirdest moment, trying to make that adjustment from one character playing my best friend to a completely new guy who I had never met, now who is now my best friend in the role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
I see what you did there. I see what you did. All right, tell you what, real quick, who wants to encapsulate the tea trolley revolution? Because I think some people are probably scratching their heads about that. I can just say, so basically, as I understand it, the UK film crew, okay, at 10 a.m. and 2 o'clock, the tea trolley comes on by and they have a little break and they do this thing. They like their long lunches. They do it at different speeds.
4 p.m. 4 p.m.
And yeah. I guess Cameron just could not wrap his head around this.
Well, if I may describe what the tea trolley was actually like, it was a metal contraption pushed along manually, usually by a woman named Daphne.
That's right.
Right.
Made out of tin, probably.
Made out of tin.
It was tin.
And yeah. there was a one of pot, like an aluminum pot, sometimes of some sort of vegetable soup or something, tomatoes, mm-hmm. very basic. Mm-hmm. There was a pot of coffee and then a hot water pot for all the tea. And then there was a plate of sandwiches. Well, the English call them sandwiches, but they're really
sticky buns.
They're usually bread with butter and maybe a sliver of cucumber.
Yes, cut in little triangles.
Yeah. A little bit of cheese.
Yeah. And that's what they, maybe cheese, and that's what they call a sandwich, right?
That's right.
But the funniest thing I ever heard on the set was, Paul Reiser, as the tea trolley came in, he walked over to the trolley and said, "Oh, good morning, Daphne. What do you have on today? A little lemon piccata?" She looked at him like, "What?"
How to spell that?
But it was it was so dead boring.
The thing I loved was the doors to get into the studio. You could come in through the side doors or any number of the side doors, or the huge kind of equipment doors, which are like the size of the building. And I remember Daphne coming in through the doors are humming. Daphne would arrive with this wobbly little tin thing with a cauldron of whatever, coffee or tea or a few sandwiches. And Jim could not believe that his passion was being interrupted. And everybody, the crew, drop everything and run to get the first sandwiches, first sticky bun, because if you didn't get there weren't enough for anybody.
Yes,
England, 1986. It's almost post-war. Anyway, there we go.
I wish somebody had filmed that. It would have been.
Hello,
dearies.
That's right.
Oh my goodness. Well, gentlemen, thank you for indulging my capricious curiosity. We're going to go to audience questions, so let's go ahead and roll our first one. Here's one from Andre, who wants to know, what was everybody's favorite thing about filming the movie?
Somebody else go on, guys.
Well, my favorite thing was actually, I've told this story numerous times, but was one of my first days on set. I had a 4:30 call. I had to go in to do my special death mask makeup, and as I was entering the soundstage, it was like 4:30, pitch black, except I could see somebody in the far distance with just like a little flashlight. And as I got closer, it was Jim Cameron. And he was completely wrapped up in the interior set of the APC, which I guess they were going to shoot in the next day or so. But he was furiously taking notes. I shouted out to him. I said, "Morning, Jim." And he was so focused, like this guy is. Didn't even register. Didn't even say hello, because it wasn't being rude. His mind was elsewhere. But then later in the day, I had my introduction to action filmmaking, where I was like hooked up with every possible wire underneath my appliance, thrown in between flame bars, having to fire a lit flamethrower at Jim Cameron and the DP, all while I'm holding my breath. It was like, wow, this was just a true introduction to action movies. So that was probably my favorite.
I'm going to say mine's got to be the sets just going on. I mean, Pinewood, how many sound stages did we have, guys? Seven or eight, something like that. Anyway, the one that blew me away is the planet surface. We went in and it was quite cold and wet outside in weather terms, and inside, it just like you were transported to a planet surface. And when the wind machines started and the rain machines, you couldn't see the roof of the studio. And it was so atmospheric. And the scene we shot was entering the compound for the first time, you know, picking up Newt and all that stuff. It just blew me away, the reality of it, and that this was blockbuster Hollywood. And you just go, wow. And so that was my coolest.
And quickly add on to that one set is that set 4 days prior had been something completely different. I mean, the set dressers and makers at the decorators at Pinewood were masters. They turned something in 4 days into a planet, a functioning planet.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been to the UK, but it was the first place I would want to go, and I'm not interested in the tourist stuff. I want to go to Pinewood.
Yeah.
I really want to go to Pinewood.
Well, I'll tell you, it's now so busy, they have got no openings for the next 7 years.
Wow.
Productions are booked for 7 years. Pinewood, that's it. It's locked.
Yeah. The weirdest day for me, I think, was, one of the most memorable days was the first time I was introduced to the Queen Alien. Because, you know, on the set, James would use a lot of practicals and he would use miniatures. But I had never seen anybody use something that was actually as big as that thing was.
Yeah.
And then to see how they mechanically worked it with people, with her, and with the guys that were working on different limbs and whatnot, I was just fascinated by that. So I think that was like one of the strangest days to actually see this queen alien, how big she actually was. And I thought that was a cool day.
Stan Winston's masterpiece.
Yes. No kidding. Yeah. One of them.
He's absolutely had many. But and just being in the audience for that reveal was because it clicked. Because, it makes sense. What was laying all these eggs and stuff like that? And again, it was restored in later versions. But when, you know, we talk about, well, you ever seen a bug queen this big? It's bigger. That was cut in the theatrical version. So when we saw this, it was like, oh, yeah, science class. Right, of course. It's got to be a queen. So. I can appreciate seeing the grandeur of it live. So, wow, very nice. And Andre, great question to start us off with. Thank you. And what do we have next? From Austin. What's the story behind character Drake's scar?
Oh, you know, nothing really except for just something to make me look tough.
Yeah, you needed something to make you look tough.
Here you go. Now Nico's going to do a pose now.
Baby face Drake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't you do something so a little cute? Yeah.
That actually brings up a good point, though. I don't know how much was maybe Cameron or the costuming or everything else, but like real servicemen, there were, and that's what gave it that natural feel to it. There was a lot of what looked like personal affectations to everybody, whether it was just a little side graffiti on the armor or this or everything else. Did any of you have any input on that, or is just this is what you're wearing?
We all did. Yeah, okay. Everybody had input, and it was a cool thing to do because the outfits, the armor was actually metal, and a lot of people don't realize that you know, it's when we were making them, we're personalizing them. If you're writing on them, you have to scratch it in. You know, you have to carve it in. So for me in particular, I was carving in, I carved in a heart, and then I was going to carve in Heather, which is the mother of my kids, in the heart. And halfway through, I realized I didn't have enough room to write Heather. So I just cut it short to Hev. And the amount of times I've had fan ask me, so who is Heath?
Your best buddy.
Hey, it's the future. Right. It's all good. It's all good.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I had no.
Frost,
I was.
Frost was back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was. Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah. No, actually, he swung both ways, I think, always. Arcturian, God knows what, but
hey, that was Mark's fault.
Cared.
Mark was the one who ad-libbed that, and I had to just roll with it.
God knows. Have you ever seen Arcturian Poontang? I don't know what direction that comes
from.
Hey,
baby, it don't matter if it's Arcturian. It's
good. It's right. It's right.
Exactly. Well, that raised one of the other kind of unanswered questions about what Cameron brought to us. Hey, is this going to be another bug hunt or whatever? It's like, so are there other alien critters of various kinds in this universe? Or, yeah, it was never... Now they're saying, of course, that the Predators are in the same universe and all that fun stuff. But, yeah, that was the little opening, to say the least. So Bill, since you were the shave tail, you didn't really mark up your uniform.
None of that stuff. No. I actually, and I have no real idea how much Jim was planning this stuff or it was just fluke. And sometimes it works out that way, whether it's theater or movies. I can remember there was like a 2-year period where I was doing a lot of work, and it seemed to me every project I stepped into, my personal life was like mirrored by the people I was playing or the project I was involved with, which was pretty spooky and a bit weird. But in terms of, I was working before rehearsals started and I wasn't available to come and rehearse when these guys were doing their boot camp. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I just couldn't have come and done it because I was doing something else. But it seemed to work that, you know, Gorman was just not there until he turned up. All the buddies, you know, very tight and relaxed and knew each other. And this guy, this Strack LT, turns up. And it worked because these guys had already done. How long was boot camp? Well, a week or 10 days? You guys were bonding. And I just turned up at the rehearsal, which kind of suited. But I don't know whether Jim did that on purpose or just life did that. I don't know.
It worked. It definitely sure worked. Did. Austin, great question. Thank you. What do we have next? Here's one from Hudson. I'm going to slightly rephrase this. Have you found yourself in possession of any props or costumes or apocrypha from the set?
Yeah. I got my original dog tags, got my original hat. I think I got a jacket from, you know, post. Yeah, I got a bug stomper jacket. I think that's about all I got. You guys got anything?
I got everything, including the bust of when they made my appliance.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
And my ex-wife threw them away.
I won't even ask why or when or how.
No, Sally, no, you're still there.
I know.
Did she know how much that was worth besides value?
No, it happened. I mean, sadly, after Aliens, I went to LA and we divorced, but I had someone offer me $200,000 for all the gear because I had my flak jacket, my bones, my hat.
Holy shit.
This guy was going to give me 200 grand. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll just, I hadn't really talked to her a whole bunch, but let me give Sally a call and see. I said, no, do you remember that stuff? She goes, oh yeah, that we threw that away.
We burnt that.
It's like the guy who turns out he had a fortune in comic books. Oh yeah, my mom threw away when I went to college.
Yeah. Really?
Or my dad, when my father moved house and he was gonna set up, my girls were little, and he was gonna set up this train track and village that my grandfather had built, right? Oh, wow. And he said to my mother, hey, you know where the box of trains are? And they were a Lionel full-on working electric train set, which even not mints are worth like $50,000.
Yeah, right. Right. And what happened? Wow.
She threw them away. She threw them away. Didn't think they were worth anything.
Boys' toys. Just get rid of them. Yeah.
The only thing I kept was I kept the script, which I still have now.
I got the script. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then I kept the dog tag. And I think maybe 10 years after the shoot, I still had it. And I had a fan sent me a letter saying that she and some of her classmates were going to go to school as the alien cast. And she was going to come as Frost. And I just thought it was so interesting that a little girl wanted to be Frost. So I sent her back an autograph, which is what she had asked for. But I also dropped the dog tag in there as well for her.
Oh,
and
wow.
That was it. That's the last time I saw it.
How cool, man.
Still, that,
that's great.
Yeah,
that's right, great. Yeah, that, bravo. That was, yeah, no kidding.
That's a really good. Nice. That's a really nice thing you did.
Yeah.
Wow, outstanding. And Hudson, great question. Thank you for that one. What do we have next? And here's one from Jones. If you came across an alien ship, would you get in it?
I don't know. What about you, Jonesy? Would you? I guess depending on, I don't know about that one. I'm not sure. That's like, how long's a piece of string? Well, I don't know. It depends on a lot of stuff. I might. What do you think?
I mean, if it looked like they had good food, maybe.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Or their Arcturian flight lieutenants were okay.
Yes,
I think I might step on.
Arcturian stewardesses, man. They never say no. Yeah,
that's right.
You know, I'd never really thought much about UFOs and aliens so much. But after being a part of the cast and that we are so often asked questions about UFOs and whatnot, I don't know if I would come anywhere near it now. Not now.
Yeah. But it's all getting very real. Good question, Jones. I mean, it's seriously real, right? I mean,
yeah,
who knows? Lots more to come.
I think it has been real for a while, but now we're actually starting to know a little bit more about it. So, I mean, I would be extremely curious because my curiosity is just something that's off the chain anyway. But whether I would get in it, I don't know about that, man.
Yeah.
To me, the question is, would the aliens even want you to come in it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a door goes down saying, come in. Or you get grabbed, or I don't know.
Yeah, just I don't know. If they exist, I think they're more scared of us than we are of them.
Yeah,
whatever reason to. But Jones, great question. Thank you for that. And let's roll another one. Here's one from Morgan. Who is the biggest prankster on the set?
No,
I would say Lance, myself.
Uh huh.
I mean Lance. Mm. I mean obviously. I mean. Paxson was obviously the
front runner,
the most entertaining. But I think Lance has always had something up his sleeve. Like, you know, he was plotting something always, especially when he was doing like the knife trick. You know, you'd see him like working this knife. And I remember questioning about it. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna incorporate this into the film. I'm thinking, how, where, why? And then sure enough, remember Rico that day it was suddenly all right. You guys do this, and Jim has agreed to shoot it all. Remember, that was one of the only real improvised moments.
Wow,
there weren't many other improvised things that happened, but that was totally improvised, right?
That was a lot of improvisation, and that was the one scene, the breakfast scene, I think, where we really got a chance to just riff off of each other like never before. And James was just rolling with it, and if something worked on a take, he would say, "Keep that in." And we would shoot another one. If somebody felt inspired to say something, they'd riff on. And the script from the actual script and the dialogue in the movie, that's the one scene, I think, mostly where they differ.
Yeah.
I believe it.
I didn't have that much screen time, set time with Lance, so I didn't spend a lot of time. But Billy was always firing off. And it's interesting, prankster, because on some sets, people can, they're pranksters. They do practical jokes and all that stuff. The set was a little real and a little frosty for that. I don't know that anybody had the motivation or time to think, oh, I know what'll really make Jim laugh or anybody. No, you just go home and change your job and hope to get off and think, I didn't screw that up. Great.
Yeah, This question comes up a lot, and I think it's and Morgan, it is a great question. I think these are better suited for a recurring television series of some kind, because you're on the set for a while and you know how far you can push the envelope and how you can't. And again, Cameron was a bundle of nerves, and the weight of the world was on his shoulder. So I am fascinated though that the mumbly peg scene, everything else was just all from you guys, because that was a great clue as to that Bishop was a synthetic person. And everything else was a great way that he nicked himself and Ripley the reveal. It sets it all up. And again, it gives it humanizes all your characters so much, so that when you do exit, we're attached to you. It's not just, you know, soldier number six.
Yeah, I also think that the way the script was written with the soldiers' interaction with each other, where they would kind of rib each other, where you know, Bill Paxton's questions asked Jeanette if she ever was a man or whatever that was. You know, I think the art start imitating art, because I remember Mark and I used to come there and we used to flex in front of each other and see who's the most pumped up and stuff like that. It was the kind of stuff that real guys would do in those circumstances. Yeah. And we found ourselves on screen and off screen doing the same shit.
Yeah. It's true. You remember the gym? We got into the gym. They built a gym for us to work out. You know, come on, guys, you're Marines, so get pumped and all the rest of it. And it was kind of early on. We didn't really know each other. And I was like, guys, coming to the gym. And Jeanette was there going, oh. So, well, I knew Michael and Billy a little bit before, but it was a little, you know, getting to know each other. Yeah.
Well, it was. And Mark and I, we were just like freaking kids flexing in front of the mirror at each other, seeing who had the biggest arms or whatever.
That's right. Which is back, little kids. Facts.
No, Rico's. I'm sorry, Rico's six pack blew everybody off the set. Nobody had a six pack.
I was on makeup.
Nobody. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But you know, if anyone was really a prankster, it was Al Matthews.
Yeah, that's true.
Al.
That's true.
I can say this now because it's no real repercussions because Al was passed for all of them. But Al always had a flask. He was always hitting his flask.
Yeah, man.
He always had a cigar.
Yeah,
and
man.
And he was blowing weed every single day. I mean.
Yeah. Come on. He was a vet. You think he had fun doing a movie? He didn't. He'd been around the block and back twice. You know, he didn't have to take
this. This was pretend. He didn't have to be straight.
But Al, bless him, I think for me, Al's influence had one of the fundamental kind of seasonings to the whole set, because Al brought the real deal on the set, and it was really,
and we felt it and I he had told me some stories about Nam, and he had kind of taken me under his wing and schooled me. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I remember Al said to me that really kind of changed my life is he said, if I was your age and I knew what I know now, I would take the money from this movie, go into the best neighborhood I could find, and buy the biggest property I could afford. And this was an old vet dropping knowledge on a young rookie who had just, you know, started the business. And to the letter, I did what he said. And I ended up buying a really nice 3-bedroom flat on the King's Road in Chelsea, London, which is like the Beverly Hills of England. And I remember years afterwards when by that time, I think I had owned maybe 4 properties in London. It all started with Al dropping that knowledge on this young rookie.
The other thing, which I came back to me the other day, I was talking to somebody about Vietnam. I think it was a documentary, and we were talking about it. And they said, oh, I don't really know that much about it. I think for our generation, you know, we're loosely speaking in our 60s plus, et cetera. Nam was very real and very present to our reality when the film was made. Now, a lot of time has gone by. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world. And I don't know how aware people are. I guess it's different parts of society, or who, if your family's military or whatever. But it was very predominant for us at that age. And now, not so much. It's kind of like history book time.
But, yeah, I remember Al told me this story about, he says, because I was asking him, you know, does it still affect you having fought? And he said, yeah. He says, I'm not with my wife now because of it. He says, I would wake up at night sometimes and have my hand around my wife's throat.
Yeah.
And she'd have to wake me up. PTSD. He says, one day we were dressed to go to church, and we were dressed in our Sunday best, and we're walking down the street with me and her, and a truck backfired. And within an instant, he said he had grabbed her, thrown her on the ground, and jumped on top of her. And once he realized what it was, he realized that he had just taken his wife in her Sunday best and threw her on the ground. and jumped on top of her. And he says the marriage didn't work out because of the stuff that he was still dealing with from being a Vietnam vet. So he was definitely the real deal. And
he brought
and
we all felt that it stuff
on set too.
Yeah,
he brought all that stuff with him, which informed us, no question. Yeah.
And a lot of the ad-libs that you see in that movie that he's doing, a lot of the lines that he's doing, that's real stuff that Al would just say, and James loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Morgan, great question. Thank you for that one. Took us some fun, or at least say illuminating paths. What do we have next? From Ariane, were there any moments during filming that you were actually spooked?
Yeah. When the roof falls in your head and you can't breathe and you think, Jesus, how are we going to get out of this? Which is a story that's been told many times. We were on the APC and the roof fell in because it was on rockers and bouncing up and down because we were, you know, in the action sequence, and the roof came down on top of our heads. And the flamethrower as well. Some stuff went off at the same time. We all took a breath and your throat closed up like a vice, because you could not breathe. The toxicity of what was released. It was a flamethrower, wasn't it, Mark? It was like you and Jeanette's.
The flamethrower hit part of the dressing,
right,
the interior of the AC, right, and lit it on fire.
Vaporized.
It was plastic. It just went up and it was toxic.
The roof came down and we couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
That was a little spooky.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's it. We're finished for the day. We're not going to shoot till tomorrow. 15 minutes. All right, everybody back on set. And you're just like, give me a break. Yeah, it's Hollywood. Next.
I think the scariest time for me may have been during my death scene, when I have to be put on fire and then fall over a roof. So they just kind of like put a little flame in front of me and then I had to fall over the baluster. But the seeing the stuntman do it was pretty frightening stuff to watch, because this guy, he was actually on fire. I mean, just blazing. And I remember after he did it one time, the second time James asked him, he says, listen, when you get on fire, I want you to pat yourself off out, like, you know, put yourself out like you would do if you finally found yourself on fire. So now he's asking this guy, not only is this guy on fire, but to start acting while you're on fire and then fall over a banister and fall down three flights into a bunch of cardboard boxes. It was just like the craziest thing ever. And that was the one time, because as a young actor, a lot of times, you know, you want to do your own stunts. That was the one stunt I was happy not to have anything to do with.
Yeah.
That was us.
And I can recall the spookiest moment I had was just walking around the set. Stan Winston and his crew were dressing up where they had the egg pods for the aliens, right? And he was preparing to have, you know, the one chest burster like come out, right? So Stan was behind the set and I'm watching them like put this rig up, and it was just like a little lever, right? Like an air pressure lever. I said, oh, and he said, yeah, see, this is gonna, you know, make the little alien thing come out. I said, oh, wow, that's really, really cool. He said, well, go around the side and here, I'll show you how it works. So I'm standing in front of the set and I've already seen the mechanics. I know how it works, right?
Yeah.
But when that thing came out, man, I jumped about 10 feet in the air and I almost went over the railing too, but without any boxes down below.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, okay, this is going to scare the shit out of people. And sure enough, when Paxton and I were sitting at the premiere, we're about 3/4 of the way back. And when that moment happens and the alien popped out, all of the penguins in the room leapt out of their seat, and Paxton grabbed my arm and said, dude, this is going to be so amazing. It's all those practical things that Cameron incorporated into the filming that you can't even put value on it. It's so amazing. Well done.
The face huggers in the med lab in that, you know, those containers. The first time they did that, I think it was to Burke. And they left it alone. It was spooky. It was very spooky.
That was a quick jump. The big
yeah, no kidding. Yeah,
yeah, that reminds me of this other the scene when we left there and we heard something and something was close by, and I think it was Mark and me and Michael, and we had the little beeper thing, beeping, and we were going to see what it was. And we would rehearse it going down the corridor a couple of times. And then on the next time we were going to do it, he says, okay, this time we're going to actually have live fire. So we want you guys to shoot. And I remember I had no idea how loud those guns were. And when we let it rip, oh my God, that thing. Yeah. I mean, that was the most frightening thing on the shoot for me, was when we let it rip, the sound of it and the power of it, you know, you could actually feel it kick back. And I was like, wow, this doesn't require any acting from us. Only thing we have to do is just pull the trigger.
No earplugs, right? Zero right. Earplugs. Right. Did they do? No.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, Ariande, great question. Thank you. And I think we have time for one more. Let's see if we can go at a really fun one. And this comes from Corbin. If you were all in a band, what would the band's name be?
Drake and the Meatheads.
Gorman and the Assholes.
I'm not even going to compete with that, but I know that the title would have frost in it.
Yeah. the frosty beehead assholes. That's right.
I think it should be Freaky Frost and the Funky Bun.
Yeah.
There you go.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Freaky Frost and the Frosty Punch. All right. Corbin, we'll settle on that egg. Gentlemen, this has been an absolute delight. Any final words before we take our leave?
Thank you, Patty. Thanks. Over and out. Great to talk, and hope to speak to you, all you guys, soon. Yeah.
Thanks, Patty. I had an idea that I thought you might want to mention to the audience.
Sure.
I got this little mini me here that I want to give to somebody if they can answer this question. There were three actors in our film and our cast members that we have done other movies together outside of Aliens. Mm-hmm. Three cast members that I have done other movies with outside of Aliens. And if somebody can give me the answer to those three actors in our cast and the name of the films, then I'll be sending them a little signed autograph of Mini Me.
Well, cool. Nice. Very cool. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So,
are those your porn features?
That's right. Does porn count? Because I can remember four or five, but okay.
All right. So I'll give them a clue. Mark is one of the guys. We did another film together. And maybe that was the porn film, huh? You only have two other actors to figure out.
You know, you're young, you needed the money, all that stuff.
Yeah,
Mark, in the documentary, you didn't mention that. Gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us here at the GalaxyCon virtual stage. It's been my absolute pleasure to serve you all. Once again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for our audience for joining us. Thank you for your great questions. Hope to see everybody again soon. Until then, bye-bye, take care, and remember, friends, smiles are free, so spend them often.